Hello, and welcome to another exciting and jam-packed episode of Modern Day Philosophers. I'm your host, I'm Danny Lobel. I'm back. I took a little break. I'm sorry. It's been tough getting my feet back on the ground here in the US of A. A lot of wedding planning, getting hit with a lot of bills. Try to stay on that high that I got from just studying spirituality in Jerusalem and just focusing on that and not having to worry about all the real life bullshit, but I'm back to it and I'm trying to maintain that positivity. And on top of that, I've got a ton of things I've been doing, so I apologize for the little break, but we're back. We're back, baby. We're back in town. Danny's back in town. I don't know. How about that? Great show today. Todd Barry is my guest, one of my all-time favorites. Todd Barry, a dry guy, a sarcastic guy, low-energy guy. We talk about all that in the interview. But first, I want to tell you about, well, I'm not even going to tell you myself. I'm going to let them tell you. Take it away, Stand Up Records. Tell them about Stand Up Records.
Warning, stand-up records may cause intestinal distress, fits of insane laughter, instant diarrhea, existential malaise, headaches, nausea, dizziness, vomiting, seasonal affective disorder, more headaches, pneumomono-ultramicroscopic silico-volcanoconiosis. Stand-up records should not be handled by women who are pregnant, may become pregnant, have ever been pregnant, or personally know anyone who has been pregnant. Do not consult your doctor if he's operating heavy machinery. Stand-up records is for external application only. And stand-up records is, of course, good for a few laughs. So remember that standuprecords.com for the world's finest comedy CDs, DVDs, and merchandise. That's standuprecords.com. The revolution will be hilarious.
There you have it, in their own words. Stand Up Records. Go get one. Go pick up my album, Some Kind of Comedian. It is available while supplies last. And then when they run out, we will order more supplies. So it's just available, in other words. You can get it. And it's quite old. I'm almost ready to record another one. Please donate to the show. I'm trying to plan a wedding here. And I'm quite broke. Quite broke. I need the money. I need the money. I want the money. I earned the money. Come on. I earned the money. I did the show. Help me out, folks. ModernDayPhilosophers.net. Make a donation. I will send you a handwritten thank you note. It's the best I could do right now. But I'm counting on you. I'm relying on you. I'm begging you for crying out loud. Okay. Francis Bacon. I'll tell you something about him after the show. But without further interruption, without further ado, except for the intro song, here it is, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only, Todd Barry. Ladies and gentlemen, take it away.
Hello, and welcome to Modern Day Philosophers.
Modern Day Philosophers.
Having failed to pay attention in school, Danny Lobel, now older and wiser, will attempt to learn basic philosophy 101. Our young hero will be joined by today's top comedians, philosophers all their own. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Danny Lobel.
Modern Day Philosophers.
I am here in the new apartment with Todd Barry. Todd's new apartment.
Relatively new, yeah.
New to the last time I visited you,
yeah,
which was,
yeah,
would be your old apartment.
Yeah. This one's better in some ways, worse in other ways.
What's interesting, I remember you did that Comedians in Cars show with Jerry Seinfeld.
Right.
And that week on the podcast, I had what I thought was a pretty clever little joke. Artie Lang was the guest, and I'd recorded it well in advance, and my joke was about New York real estate and how John Lennon could be murdered in front of the Dakota building. Just that's how good the Dakota must be, that Yoko Ono wouldn't leave.
Right.
And then 2 days later, after my podcast aired, and I was even thinking maybe bring that joke to the stage, you know?
Yeah.
Wasn't there yet. But that was one of the ones for consideration. Then Jerry Seinfeld made that joke.
I know. He is a huge fan of your podcast.
Right. No, well, no.
No,
I'm
it's
not
parallel
even,
thinking.
I'm not even suggesting.
I know that.
but the reason I bring it up is not just to say, hey, you know, I'm coming up with the same stuff as Seinfeld. But,
yeah.
But really what I'm bringing it up is because in the context that it was brought up on the Comedians in Cars thing, it was because you had not left that apartment for so long. Right? That you'd been in.
No, that one was only like 3 years.
Oh, well.
The one before that was like 19 years.
So the place before that you said 19 years?
Something like that. Horrible.
Is it hard to leave that?
I wish it were easier to leave because I would have left sooner. But it is hard to leave in New York because you It's a nightmare looking for a place. So when you just get that lease in the mail and you're like, oh, I can sign this and mm-hmm. Now I don't have to think about moving.
But it's also easy. That familiarity, that feeling of you're always trying to make something feel like home, right?
Yeah, and then you get I got a little emotionally attached to it. But then I realized, you know, there's mice in this place, and it's just, why do I want to live in a place that has mice at this stage in my life? So I got out of there, you know. I thought I'd be really emotional. And I guess I was a little emotional about moving, but I didn't like break down.
I was in my apartment for 8 years in Brooklyn. Yeah. And it became like home to me, and it felt like home. And I still have dreams that I go back and I can reclaim my old apartment. Do you get anything like that?
Yeah. Well, what happened with my old apartment is that it got bought out. The whole building got bought. So they wanted to renovate every apartment, which I understand if you buy a building mm-hmm. and you want to make it fancier. So you can't have people in there. So they just didn't renew leases, and basically everyone got out of there. But I would move back in because now the building's a little fancier. The last apartment I had.
Right.
The apartment prior to that, I don't see that one getting much better unless they're doing something.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So you think about moving back into your old place.
Yeah, I dream about it. It's in, you know, I built a real attachment to the place.
Yeah.
It wasn't a great place. It wasn't a glamorous place. It was just, it felt very much like home.
Well, that's what's important, right?
Yeah. Do you find that feeling like you're always trying to chase some kind of feeling of home?
Yeah, on some level I do. You get, when you're on the road for a while, you feel like, oh, I got to get home. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not like, I do like to get out of the house. Like, I almost always go out for coffee. Like, I rarely make it myself because I'd like to. It looks really fun to make it and buy it and grind it, but I always want to get out of my house. Same like when I'm in a hotel room, I want to get out of the hotel room, even though I'm like, I got to have a nice hotel room.
See, I'm the opposite. I always want to stay in the house. I always want to stay in the hotel room. Hell yeah. I almost find it, I want to take two vacations. One where I only experience the hotel room,
uh-huh.
and one where I can enjoy the city without thinking, man, I got that nice hotel room. What am I doing out here?
So you're not a fidgety dude?
I don't know. I guess I'm, I don't know. What do you mean by fidgety?
I mean, you're comfortable going, all right, I'm going to sit home and I'm going to hang out.
Yeah.
I don't feel like leaving. And
I'm a homebody.
Are you?
Yeah. But there's also that little voice in the back of my head that, and I guess because I'm a heavy guy, I think, oh, I don't want to, maybe this is scary, man. I don't want to be one of those heavy guys that gets
trapped
in his house.
That's a good point.
So that's a motivator to get out.
Yeah, you should get out then.
Yeah. It's a lot more romanticized to be a homebody if you're not heavy. I think if you're heavy, then people think, oh, he just doesn't leave because he can't.
Right.
You know, that's not the case. I like the feeling of being in a home. You know.
You got a nice place now?
Yeah, pretty nice place. We just moved 4 months ago into a house. Which
really?
Is cool. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Sounds like a nightmare.
No, it's good.
You have to mow your lawn?
Well, I guess I do because the landlord was supposed to provide gardeners when he hasn't, and it's been 4 months. So the lawn is getting
pretty bad. Oh, my God, you got one of those houses. You got one of those. Who lives in that house with the grass that hasn't been mowed for 4 months?
Yeah. What kind of home did you come from while we're on the topic of homes?
Well, when I first few years of my life, it was an apartment in the Bronx area. Then an apartment in upstate New York, then apartments. It's always been apartments until, like, gosh, I don't remember what year. Maybe when I was, like, 11, we bought an actual house in Florida. Started out in an apartment in Florida, but then, I'd never lived in a house.
Did you like being in a house after all the apartments?
I don't think I really had an opinion. It was probably... You know, it's not like I had to maintain the house as an 11-year-old. I did the lawn once in a while, but I mean, right now, I couldn't imagine living in a house. Like, if I had...
You couldn't imagine it.
Well, I could imagine it, but okay. If I had tons of money, like, and even lived in Los Angeles, I think I would live in a condo.
Why?
Well, I wouldn't want to... I feel like there's a lot of upkeep with a house that I wouldn't want to deal with. I mean, I know you could just pay people to do stuff, which I do. But I think I like, even though I'm kind of a loner, I think I like a little, I don't like to feel too isolated.
Do you really consider yourself a loner?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. I do. I think I am on some level, yeah, compared to most, the average person, I think.
And you're happier by yourself?
Not necessarily. I mean, I have a girlfriend. We hang out. That's fun. But, you know, I do a lot of stuff alone. I mean, there's people who don't do anything alone. And I don't have a lot of... I mean, I'll go to concerts alone. I'll go to movies alone. I'll eat alone.
Concerts alone, that's a big one.
It isn't really. I mean, you just go to the concert. It's not like if you were at a concert and you saw someone standing there alone, you'd be like, what's going on with that person, that poor person? You'd just be like, hey, they're here at the show, and I'm here at the show, and we're watching the show.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. For some reason in my head, it seemed like...
The saddest thing?
Not the saddest thing, but not necessarily the happiest either.
No, I mean, I feel like if you don't have anyone, if you ask around, hey, you want to go see this band or whatever, and then no one wants to go, and you want to see that band,
may as well go, right?
It's better than like, oh, I sat home because I didn't want to go to something alone.
But there's an asking around process.
Yeah, for some things are better shared, but some things, I mean, I went to see Book of Mormon by myself.
How was it?
It was great. It was fantastic. But it was a thing where they're like, I kind of knew someone on the inside who could help me get like seats. I had to pay a lot of money, but I didn't, you know, I get free tickets. But they were thinking like, pick a few days that you're open, and then we'll assign one to you, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, what am I going to, call someone and go, hey, you want to go see this play with me? It costs $150, and you have to be ready to go on either of these days. So I just said, I'm going by myself, and I went by myself, and it was great.
Yeah.
And let's face it, I didn't want to have to buy a Broadway ticket for someone, but I have.
You know, it took me a while, and I'm still getting comfortable being alone.
Really?
Yeah.
But you're a comic, but you don't do the road a lot.
Not as much as I was doing it. But still a fair amount recently. And that's what I hate about it the most, is the aloneness.
No, it gets super lonely. I don't. It's not like I don't get lonely. I get real lonely.
Yeah?
Yeah, I can get real. Yeah, on the road especially, you're just like... Sometimes you're in a place where you're like, oh, man, I wish I could walk around with someone and we could look at shit. But so it gets lonely. But it's also fun to... I don't know, it's kind of fun to wander by yourself.
Does it get less lonely the more years you do it?
I don't know. I never thought about that. I mean, at some point, it's just what you're used to on some level, so.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least I am.
Are there any things you do to deal with loneliness, or you just accept it?
Well, you mean when I'm on the road?
Yeah.
I try to find stuff to do in the city I'm in. Like, I think sitting in the hotel is kind of lonely, but also walking around by yourself is lonely.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And, you know, you can socialize with the other comedians you're working with. But I don't make a huge effort to meet up with people. And if I'm lucky enough to be in a town where I know people, then you hang out with them. But otherwise, you just deal with it. Try to eat some good food, find a good cup of coffee, some little neighborhood to roam around in.
What are your favorite cities?
Favorite cities. Wow. I like Toronto. I like Seattle. I like Portland. I like Chicago, Austin. I mean, these are real left field cities. You never would have expected any of these. San Francisco is really cool. I like Los Angeles.
Did you ever live out in Los Angeles?
No, not for like more than a few weeks. Pittsburgh's a cool city.
Yeah, I like Pittsburgh a lot.
I think that's an underappreciated city. Philadelphia is pretty cool. Atlanta, I like. I like North Carolina. I know that's not a city.
It's not a city, yeah.
But like Asheville and Raleigh, Chapel Hill. I'm just going to name every city I've had a good time in.
If I let you go, there was a
little... But I mean, I like all cities. Yeah. On some level, I like going any place that's not where I live.
Yeah, all right. Fair answer.
It's a totally fair answer.
Yeah. When I was a kid, we moved from an apartment in Flushing, Queens to a house in Long Beach.
Yeah.
And I really resented leaving an apartment. I thought there was nothing cooler than being in an apartment.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Nothing like that for you when you moved in Florida?
No, I mean, I guess it seemed like a step up. It's not like I lived in some penthouse or anything. So it wasn't, mm-hmm. this was, I'm sure it was definitely much more room.
I still think apartments are cooler. There's something very yeah. cool about an apartment.
Yeah, I'd love to have a, I mean, I have a pretty nice small apartment, but I'd love to have a nice bigger apartment.
Are you an only child?
I have a brother.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Older?
He's older, 3 years older.
What does he do?
He's in advertising.
Are you close?
Yeah, we are pretty close, yeah.
Does he live here in New York?
He lives on the West Coast.
Oh.
I'm not going to reveal.
You don't know, yeah, but you don't want to have him been hounded down, you know?
Yeah.
Todd Barry's brother. That could happen.
Yeah.
People trying to get to you through him.
Exactly.
Or maybe just people wanting, you know.
Can you pass this on and get Todd to sign this? Well, I'm sure they would go through that effort.
Has anybody done anything extraordinary to get to you?
No. I mean, I'm not too hard to get to.
Mm.
I mean, if I do a show, I hang out. I don't do an Elvis has left the building or anything.
Makes sense. Yeah. Do you have? You must have at this point some pretty dedicated fans, I would imagine.
There's a small number, you know. You see, like, people like, oh, okay, that guy favorites 80% of my tweets. And you say, well, okay, that's a loyal one.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I have my little thing, my little following.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about energy, about the energy when I said, we took some photos during the mic test.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I don't want mic test energy photos. And he said, it's the same energy. I have only one energy.
Well, also, we are doing a podcast, so it's not like I'm going to, like, hey, I'm going to just bring it to the stage. Like, it's like...
Right.
It's like, I can... It's just talking.
But I've always been fascinated by this even-keel energy that you have.
Yeah, it's a curse.
You think it's a curse?
It's a curse and a blessing.
What part of it's the curse and what's the... That saying always means it's almost nothing. It's a curse.
Well, I just think that you have more opportunities if you're high energy. And people look at you a certain way if you're not high energy. But on the flip side of that, it does make me different than a lot of people.
It's unique.
It's unique. So there are people, you know, I've had huge, big, tough-looking guys come up and go, oh, man, you're laid back. I love it. Or things along those lines. So
mm-hmm.
people like it. But, you know, it's also like I find bookers and maybe I think you're perceived as like, oh, you can only do this little small thing because we need a screaming fucking idiot to do the. And I say that mainly joking because there's plenty of high energy acts that I love.
Sure. But you think it's been limiting in that way?
It's probably limiting, but it's also probably helped me. But, you know, I think there's a lot of and I'm not saying I'm like some weird act, but there's acts where you're like, they're kind of unusual and they have a little rough time. And then someone takes shine to them. And then you're like, oh, then they find all these people like, oh, that's for me. That's something different for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then they become bigger than the sort of generic people that they were performing with when they were younger. I don't know if that made sense.
Well, yeah, I got it. Were there times before your career had started to take shape that you felt maybe this was such a detriment that it was something you would try to fight against?
No, I never thought about it. I never thought about my energy till people pointed it out. I never was like, I never thought about it.
You never tried to be high energy against?
No, I don't. No, I haven't. I haven't.
What if there was a role?
If there was a role, that's acting. Yeah, I would. I would love to
turn up the energy.
Yeah, I mean, if someone offered me something like that and I wanted to do it, sure, I'd be interested in doing that.
But it hasn't happened yet.
Not like where I'm a maniac. No, not really a screaming asshole like I said earlier.
Now I'd love to see it.
Just well, you're not going to see
such,
it.
Not you're now. Not see I mean, it. I mean, if that's, it was in a movie or something.
Yeah, well.
I don't mean do it now.
If there's any casting people out there, you know.
It would be interesting, just the contrast to who you are, to see you in such a very different
right.
light.
I mean, know? A lot of things I get, they kind of just ask me to be myself, which is nice. But it's also like, why don't you see if I can do something else? But at the same time, there's so you know, there's so many people who are actors who are way better than me, so I don't expect to get anything.
Do you think that if you tried to take on a different energy and you did that for, let's say, a week or a month, I don't know how long it takes before you start becoming acclimated to something new, but do you think you could take it on and it would stick?
I've thought about it lately. I mean, I feel like sometimes I do. Sometimes I feel like I'm not low energy at all. I know I'm not screaming, but I mean, I also think it's weird to see someone yelling. It's mm-hmm. like, it seems like, why are you yelling? I mean, some people it's very natural.
Seems unnecessary.
And I think it works, you know, Kinison it worked for, and you know, there's a lot of really good, funny, high energy comics, but sometimes it just seems like it's to compensate for weak material.
Oh, yeah.
I know that I'm not the first person to point that out.
Sure. But what do you mean when you say sometimes you think I'm not low energy at all?
Well, sometimes people describe it, and then I'll be on stage. I'm like, I don't feel like I'm being low energy. I don't feel like I'm like, how's it going? I don't feel like I'm like that.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe sometimes I am.
Internally, you feel more excited.
I was talking to someone way, way back, and I said something about someone describing me as low energy, and she said, you're not low energy, you're intense. I was like, oh, okay, well, that sounds good.
That's more artsy for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I'm intense, baby. You call it low energy, I'm intense.
You want to be intense, isn't
yeah,
you?
I'm an intense guy.
What about, are you an angry guy inside? I mean, it's you know what it is? It's hard to read emotion on you.
Yeah.
I think you're very good at masking emotion.
I mean, I've got my anger in me, sure. I'm not going to get into it, but sure. I mean, I don't know. Am I angrier than the average person? I have no idea.
Yeah, how do you gauge it?
Right. Yeah, right. Some people, I think, oh, I'm an angry person. Well, maybe you're not as maybe you're as angry as everyone you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I'm like, I can't compare myself. But I am the angriest dude around. No, I'm joking.
All right, well, Todd, are you... Do you feel about ready to get into the philosophy?
Yeah, let's get into some philosophy.
All right, cool. So Alex Fasella is the guy who picks out the philosophers for the comedians.
Uh-huh.
He knows about philosophy.
He's your talent coordinator but for philosophers.
For philosophers.
He books the philosophers on your show.
Okay, yeah.
Got it.
So he picked a guy named Francis Bacon for you. Do you know anything about him?
I know who he is. I don't know anything about Francis Bacon, though. I thought he was an artist.
No, I don't think so.
See,
I mean,
that
I
makes me look like a dum-dum.
Well, I don't know.
Maybe your friend Alex is dumb. And this guy, it's to me, I would have guessed painter, but I'm clearly wrong.
Well, I'll tell you because...
But I've definitely heard of Francis Bacon. I can't say I know anything about him.
I don't know anything about him either.
So you're learning this for the first time now?
Yeah, for the first time.
He sounds like a painter, doesn't he?
Yeah, it does sound like a painter. I think it's that Francis.
Yeah, it's the Francis, or maybe it's the Bacon.
You think the
or
Bacon?
Or maybe that he's really a painter, and you just haven't owned up to it.
Maybe. Francis Bacon lived from January 22nd, 1561, to April 9th, 1626. He was an English philosopher, a statesman, a scientist, a jurist? Is that just somebody who's served on
a
jury?
I don't know what a jurist... Well, I mean, I know what a jurist is, but I wouldn't think it would be like... I'm guessing their jury duty was different back then, but...
Maybe I should stop avoiding jury duty just so when I die, I have that little thing to put. A comedian, a jurist. He was an orator, an essayist, and an author.
He was... Got it. You'd think on that list, painter would be up there, because guy does everything.
No painter. Why make the distinction between essayist and an author? Isn't an author an essayist? Isn't an essayist an author?
An essayist would be an author, but maybe they're distinguishing the fact that he wrote things other than essays.
Hmm.
perhaps he wrote poetry or something.
It just seems like they're really trying to give him a lot more credits than he deserves.
Maybe he wrote like a painting manual because he's a painter.
He served both as Attorney General and Lord Chancellor of England. Those are good, good gigs. After his death, he remained extremely influential through his works, especially as a philosophical advocate and practitioner of the scientific method during the Scientific Revolution. Probably a pretty nerdy revolution.
Yeah, probably. That's probably the nerdiest revolution.
Yeah. Not too many people hurt in the Scientific Revolution.
No.
Bacon has been called the father of empiricism. His works established and popularized inductive methodologies for scientific inquiry, often called the Baconian method or simply the scientific method. His demand for a planned procedure in investigating all things natural, marked as a new turn in the rhetorical and theoretical framework for science, much of which still surrounds concepts of proper methodology today. I don't know what proper methodology is. Probably better than improper methodology.
Exactly.
Yeah. Bacon was knighted in 1603 and created Baron Verlam. I don't know what that means. In 1618. And Viscount St. Alban in 1621. As he died without any heirs, both peerages became extinct upon his death.
So he had no family.
No family.
See, he was a loner.
He was like you in that way. He famously died of pneumonia, contracted while studying the effects of freezing on the preservation of meat.
Wow. This guy was like a James Franco. He's the James Franco of the 1500s.
James Franco, you pick.
Yeah.
Why'd you go with Franco?
Franco, just, you never know what he's going to do next. You know? It's like, there's all these interests.
I guess it's not too late for you to wind up having kids. Is that something you've ever considered?
It might be a little late for that, but I don't necessarily see it happening. What about you?
I probably will want to have kids at some point. I'm not ready to at this point, but so not an interest for you to have kids at all.
I mean, I see it on some. I mean, I see little kids. I have a lot of little kids who live in my building here.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, waving to them on the elevator, and they're really. I mean, I see it on some level, but I also feel like unless you're sure you want to do it, it's not like, buying a tennis racket because you think you might play tennis, and then you're like, let's throw it in the corner.
It's kind of a dangerous way of thinking that I fall into as well. Because how am I really sure I want to do anything? I'm not. I'm not even sure I want to do this.
I know, but there's big repercussions. Like if you decided you want to do this, you could scrap it.
Right.
You could email me and go, Todd, I don't want to do this anymore. Sorry, I wasted your time.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'd be like, whatever. Or you could just quit after this episode.
So it's the fear is getting stuck into something that's hard to get out of.
It's not fair to it.
To the kid.
Yeah, I mean, I've met people who have kids kind of like, I just got pregnant. Like it's a goof or something.
Right.
I just think it's serious shit.
Yeah, I understand that.
But, I like them when they're like 2 years old. They're when they can just start walking. Oh, my God, they're so cute.
Maybe you could foster a kid.
I see the way people feed their kids. I was just eating somewhere recently, earlier today, and this was a communal table, and this woman had a little kid, maybe five, and like a whole gigantic donut he had. It's just like, you don't need to get him going on that gigantic. You know what I mean? It's like the thing was the size of his head.
Yeah.
And he ate the whole thing, which it's a donut. Of course you can eat the whole thing. But it feels like you could tell your kid.
I see that too. And as a heavy person myself, I always feel like you're getting your kid on drugs,
It's true. I see kids, I see kids in strollers where there's like a bag of Doritos sitting on their belly, in their lap, and they're just like, I don't think I'm not like some hell. I mean, I ate a whole thing of jelly beans yesterday. Most of a whole thing. And so it's not like I practice what I preach, but I would never do that to a kid. I wouldn't be like, mm-hmm. Hey, jelly beans, they're right here. Take 300 of them like I just did.
So you can almost argue that you might be an excellent
parent.
I'd probably
be a fantastic parent.
Yeah.
It's the ones like me who would be the best parents that don't have kids.
You know, I went to yeshiva.
Yeah.
And I remember when we learned about Moses, they said what made him a great leader was that he didn't want to lead. Like,
well, that's why I'm a great comic, I guess.
You don't want to comed?
Yeah.
What made Moses great was that he didn't want to be a leader. It takes so much arrogance and power hunger to want to be a leader that kind of person would be a poor leader. But somebody who really cares about the people and says, I don't want to lead them because I could screw up, that person really cares. That would make a good leader.
That's a good, I mean, you feel like a lot of politicians, they feel like they're all kind of compromised on some level. And you feel like sometimes you'll see someone who's like, oh, that guy's actually a decent person. He'll never get elected.
Mm-hmm.
Or she'll never get elected.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't trust anybody as soon as they want to lead. You know, it seems like a sociopathic want, a sociopathic desire to want to.
Yeah, it's a little crazy, right?
Yeah,
I agree.
Maybe you'd be the fantastic parent.
Maybe
based
it'd be
on
like
this.
The best president and parent ever. I should be the president and a parent.
Have you? What about marriage? Is that something you've also avoided for the same reason? It's very permanent and it's tough to get.
I don't know how I feel about that. Right now, I don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what marriage does really. Like, if you're already going out with someone, what does it really do?
It makes it tougher to get out of it.
Right. But is that a good thing?
I'll tell you why it could be a good thing. Because it'll force you to work through shit that you wouldn't otherwise work through.
And
maybe come out stronger on the other side. This is not, I'm just saying the argument. I'm not even sure if I believe it.
Okay.
But I'm theorizing why it could be a good thing.
I've heard that before, but also, I mean, there's people who are married who are just so fucking miserable.
I know.
And they're locked into this thing because of what you said.
It's frightening.
And they're just what's the point if you're unhappy? I know that's if you're unhappy. I'm not saying that all people married are unhappy. But
it is scary when you see
But if you're doing it.
It
just for like, this forces us to work stuff out. Like, if you don't have the personality to work stuff out already.
Right.
And you need to be married. Like, I don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're like an unreasonable person, being married is like, hey, I guess I should work this out because I'm married. I don't know if that's reality.
Mm-hmm. So do you, you can't conceive of any good reason to get married without the.
Well, maybe there's tax advantages and.
Yeah.
And maybe at some point you just go, let's just do this because people do it.
Yeah.
But. Just like having a wedding seems like a nightmare. You know?
Have you ever had a desire to be married? With anybody?
Not specifically the married part, you know? I'm not saying, sometimes I've fantasized about it, but it's not like, I got to get married. It's like, well, you can also just go out with someone and be committed to them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not much difference.
Do you think there's a, because what I'm starting to feel is some kind of a theme is that there seems to be a fear of permanence. Is that accurate at all?
Fear of permanence. Well, marriage isn't permanent because half the people find a way to make it impermanent.
But I wonder, maybe fear is actually too strong a word.
Yeah, that was a really strong word you just used. That's all right.
I heard this woman speaking recently, and she kept saying, I don't want to weaponize this word. I thought that was a funny way of, you know, making a word more powerful.
I like that. I've never That's a good word. I might use weaponize in the future.
Yeah. I don't want to weaponize this word. Take it easy with this word. I'm going to keep this word calm and reasonable. Maybe it's just a reluctance to permanence. Maybe it's just...
Well, what's permanent? I mean, what would be permanent? What have I said that makes me not want to...
It's just a question of... you live in temporary residencies.
Well, I know. I live in an apartment that I sign a lease.
But it's a rental.
It's not a rental, but I live in New York where most people rent.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, but that's a choice, too.
But also, I mean, not to get into a real estate discussion, but... If you have money to make rent, you can live in a much nicer place than if you bought a place. So you could take all your life savings and dump it into a down payment on something that's not really you don't want to be your permanent home.
But then the counter thing that I feel sometimes is, oh, I'm just pouring all my money into rent and somebody else is, you know.
I feel that too. Like, I feel like I don't full on like decorate a place because I'm renting, because I'm like, oh, they might raise my rent to some 6 months and like I'm not going to want to pay that much and then I want to move. But you know, people, you say, oh, you're throwing money out the window when you're renting. Well, you buy a place, there's like that $1,800 a month maintenance fee. What do you get for that?
Mm-hmm.
That's out the window.
Yeah.
All those taxes are out the window if you're calling money that you don't get anything back from, you know what I mean?
Like, right.
Insurance and all that shit. This is getting really philosophical.
No, but I definitely I think about this a lot, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I do think if I had a ton of money, I would buy a place in New York, and then I would, you know, it'd be nice to have one of those cool apartments.
Yeah. But everything you have could easily be taken apart.
What do you mean?
Well, the apartment, like you said, you don't decorate it because you might leave.
Right.
So it wouldn't take much to take that apart and move, which you do.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to get out of a marriage because you never got into one. You don't have to, you know, you don't have the baggage of kids. So, you're very... Very free. Very free and very mobile.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In theory. So it's almost like anything that seems permanent would be... antithetical to what you would gravitate towards.
I like being independent, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you're partially right, but...
Is it a sense of freedom? I mean, you brought up being free.
Who doesn't want to be free?
It's a good question.
I mean,
you're
doing your podcast.
No one's,
like, you're not shopping it around. You're like, I want to do this thing.
Right.
And then you just do it.
Yeah.
I mean... And, you know, comedy, do whatever you say whatever you want.
What do you think it is that makes you feel like I need to be free, I need to be more so than other people who will lock themselves down into things?
Well, I think that those people probably want to be free as well. And I also don't walk around going how free I am. I mean, on some level, sometimes I do. I feel pretty free. But, I mean, I think some people get married and do all that because they think they're supposed to. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see, I think people maybe in the suburbs, when I grew up there, probably all got married before they were 30, or most of them.
Yeah.
So it's just a different way of living here in the New York City area.
You ever see yourself leaving New York City, or?
I mean, sometimes I'll go to a city and I'll be like, ooh, and I'll go on I'll start looking at real estate online.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, how much would a loft in Portland be? And then you're like, wow, I could easily live in Portland. But then, I don't know. I guess I like the permanence of living in New York. There you go.
You have that one consistent thing.
Yeah, I mean, I could barely maintain one place. So the idea of like, I'm only going to have two places and one's just going to be sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm certainly not going to Airbnb it.
here's a brief synopsis of what I read to you about what Bacon did. Bacon was famous for the Baconian method of inductive reasoning. Inductive reasoning is using... Oh, and I didn't even tell you why Alex picked this guy.
Yeah, why did he pick me? I didn't know that you knew that.
Yeah, Alex said that he picked this guy for you because, in his opinion, your comedy is very sarcastic. So I guess I would ask, do you agree with his opinion on that?
Yeah, probably.
He says,
is that what Francis Bacon has done for being sarcastic?
Very sarcastic philosopher.
Oh God, it was fucking just let it go for a little bit. That's funny.
Yeah, he says in sarcasm, one has to listen for the real meaning. I guess you know, to understand the sarcastic comedy, you have to know what the person really means.
Right.
So, okay. So, philosopher of observation. It's a little bit of a stretch, I think.
It's a little, yeah. I mean, aren't all philosophers kind of observers?
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the connection to the
Alex didn't really try this hard. Yeah. He didn't try hard on this one. He's like, is he sarcastic and Francis Bacon? Observe things.
Yeah.
So that's why I picked him. Yeah, okay.
Well, like I was saying, Bacon was famous for Baconian method of inductive reasoning. Inductive reasoning is using scientific evidence to construct a theory. For example, Newton observing a falling apple and thinking of the law of gravity. The theory is only built after all the evidence is in. We must be wary of the, quote, idols of the tribe. Wrongful, preconceived, common to all thinkers that pose a serious threat to scientific method. People have a tendency to take their viewpoint as an absolute truth, but we must remain as objective as possible to not paint a flawed picture of the world.
Sounds pretty reasonable. Sounds like now I see why Alex picked him. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a reasonable guy.
So he should have just said Todd's a reasonable
guy.
Todd's
really smart. Todd's as smart as this incredibly famous philosopher. This is it's the only philosopher who can match the intellect.
Yeah. And he also only lived in apartments. I don't know if that's true. All right. So basically, I guess what he's saying, the contrast of Bacon to people who came before him, like, was probably more like Aristotelian philosophers, was that they weren't going off evidence, I think. He was taking scientific evidence and basing theory on evidence.
Well, you said he was an empiricist, right?
Yes.
So that's evidence.
Yeah. So
I'm just letting everyone know that I know what empirical evidence is. I'm no dum-dum.
I guess philosophizing without evidence was pretty much the standard until he came along.
I didn't know that, but I guess so.
So he went to a lot of good schools, Oxford. He was an Oxford boy. He entered the Trinity College in Cambridge. You ever been out to England?
Yeah, I've been to England a bunch of times.
Yeah?
Do you like it? I love it there. I want to go. I was thinking today I want to go back there.
Yeah, I could see you doing well in Oxford or Cambridge.
I've never been to Oxford or Cambridge, but I've been to London and Manchester.
You never played the Glee Club in Oxford?
No, I heard those Glee Clubs are good.
They are good. Yeah.
You play one?
I have. Yeah, I've played all of them, I think.
Did you do well?
Yeah. Oh, they're some of the best gigs.
Yeah, they're really what, very well behaved or?
Well behaved. You know, it's funny because the club doesn't match the way it looks. You know, sometimes you judge an audience by the way the club looks.
Yeah.
So the club looks like it's going to be a shitty audience.
Really?
To me, you know. I think, you know, when I see big flashy lights behind the stage and stuff like that, I'm already turned off. But they're actually a very good crowd.
Yeah, I've heard that they're well run there, that those are good clubs.
It seems like he was a pretty significant guy here. Okay, here we go. His studies brought him to the belief that the methods and results of science, as then practiced, were erroneous. His reverence for Aristotle, and I brought up Aristotle, so now I feel like I'm smart.
Yeah, yeah.
His reverence for Aristotle conflicted with his loathing of Aristotelian philosophy. Man, the more I do this, the more I'm starting to hit things.
Yeah, yeah, you're hitting some smart points there, man.
Yeah. Ooh, I feel good. I feel like this is one of the rare times that I'm right there before Wikipedia, before I read it anyway. His reverence for Aristotle conflicted with his loathing of Aristotelian philosophy. That's a tough position to be in. You love the guy, but you hate his work.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who Yeah, well, I could say that about a number of people.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Which seemed to him barren and wrong in its objectives.
So they were personal? Wait, how he loved him personally?
Disputatious, like he could dispute it. Well, he didn't. I guess he wouldn't have known him personally because he came so many years after
right.
him. But I guess he might have represented something cool, you know?
Yeah, I didn't think they were like, they went to the pub together.
You know what I think it's like? I think it's like the appreciation that a lot of young comics have for Lenny Bruce, but if they listen to his material, it doesn't do anything for them.
Exactly. I haven't listened to a lot of Lenny Bruce. I should.
Yeah, I like Lenny Bruce. And when I say that, I'm talking about other comics who have expressed that to me, because I do get stuff out of his material. Who were your guys that you looked up to as comics?
Well, a lot of, I used to watch, like, what they would, you know, you don't remember, like, the Merv Griffin show and stuff like that.
I watch clips on YouTube.
But you're aware of it.
Yeah.
You'd watch that and the Tonight Show, and there'd always be these guys, like, here's a bright young comic. And it would always be someone, so I was very into that. I was like, I knew who Letterman was way before he had a show, and you know, Bill Hicks and all these people. And so I used to like watching those guys. And then the bigger names, who did I like? Oh, I liked Andy Kaufman, even though I'm not at all Andy Kaufman-esque. I liked Steve Martin, Carlin. You know, I got to see him a few times. Went and saw Jay Leno way before he had The Tonight Show. See, a lot of these people were really popular before they had shows. Like even, you know, Seinfeld was a theater act before he had that show.
Hmm.
Who else is there? I always forget people. Kinison, I did like Kinison. You know, Richard Pryor.
I hear a lot of comics talk about Jay Leno, like, oh, he was the greatest.
He was a really good comic, yeah. I mean, yeah, he's a good comic. I think they don't like The Tonight Show, or what he did on The Tonight Show, perhaps, but, yeah, he was a really good comic. And, you know, he worked hard and...
You know what it is? You know what?
Fought for comics to rights and stuff, to be paid. And
my theory on why people get mad at Jay Leno for The Tonight Show... is because I think Jay Leno treated it like a job, and they wanted to treat it like a myth.
That's interesting. I never thought of it that way.
That's what I think. How did we get on to Jay Leno? We were
about... We went on all sorts of tangents. New York real estate.
It's a show of tangents.
It doesn't matter, right? It's podcast, no rules.
Yeah. Do you like doing a podcast?
I do. My own podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's just the obligation part of it that's rough.
I was, because of the commitment, the permanence?
Well, just like, yeah, well, not the permanence, not but the just permanence, the, but. Well, I guess permanence, but the never, like.
It never ends.
Yeah, you're like, all right, that one went well. Oh, I got to do that again. And I gotta, like the never-ending perpetual quality of it.
You were one of the guys I was most surprised when you started doing a podcast.
Yeah.
I was like, that doesn't seem in character. I was excited about it, but I was surprised.
Number 75 on iTunes today. On the comedy charts.
All right. Here's a little bit of Francis Bacon. The idols of the tribe have their foundation in human nature itself. And this is before he was talking about we must be wary of the idols of the tribe, which was wrongfully perceived common to all thinkers that poses a threat to scientific method, I guess. So that's the idols of the tribe. The idols of the tribe have their foundation in human nature itself and in the tribe or race of men. For it is a false assertion that the sense of man is the measure of things. What does that mean? The false assertion that the sense of a man is the measure of things.
I don't know. I'd have to think about that one.
On the contrary, all perceptions, as well of the sense as of the mind, are according to the measure of the individual and not according to the measure of the universe. Can you make heads or tails of any of that?
No, this is Alex is really throwing us under the bus on this one.
Yeah, sometimes these paragraphs are the hardest part to make any, because this comes right out of his text.
Yeah. I didn't expect it to be, like, super simple. This guy's like, people are talking about this guy 600 years later because he wrote real simple stuff.
Yeah. The sense of, but, you know, when you break it down, it's always got to be pretty simple. There aren't that many complex thoughts, I think.
Well, it'd be interesting that, you know, if he were here today, if you could go, can you explain that to me because I'm stupid? That's what I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And see if he could simplify it. But there's probably someone out there who could simplify it. We're just not those people.
Sometimes I get them.
Yeah.
Sometimes. On the let me read this line again. On the contrary, all perceptions as well as the sense as the mind are according to the measure of the individual and not according to the measure of the universe. So it's based on the person, not based... The sense of the mind, I think he's talking about, and again, I'm really simplifying it the best I can, but I think he's saying that truths are individual. Like, you know, your perception of the world, it's not based on the universe. It's not, like when I asked you earlier if you're angry, is, you know, compared to what? It's really based on the individual, not the measure of the, I don't know. It's a stretch in the explanation too, but I'm trying. And the human understanding is like a false mirror, which receiving rays irregularly distorts and discolors the nature of things by mingling its own nature with it. Okay, so yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Human understanding, again, it's individually.
It's all filtered through your own experiences and belief system.
I think he's justifying why he's using.
I don't know what I'm talking
science.
About.
No, you're right. I think he's really justifying why he would use scientific method to philosophize on, because if you go individually, he's saying it's all distorted.
Right. This way, these are hard facts that you can't argue with.
Yeah, he's saying this stuff is across the board, universal.
Got it.
Rather, why listen to what one individual how they perceive the world?
Yeah.
It's a waste of time. In his opinion.
I can see that.
I don't know if he was an atheist, but it seems to be like a very atheist stance to me, because it's very fact. I need facts. I'm not working off anything that's not proven on
a
sheet.
Yeah, it's hard
you know?
I don't know if he's an atheist, but he I wouldn't be surprised if he was.
Mm-hmm.
But then you never know. You never know.
Yeah.
I think if I read it 12 times and took little notes each time, I might be able to come up with something that interpretation of what. But that's, you know, that's pretty. It's heavy, heavy stuff, you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a crack at these quotes.
All right. Here they come. The quotes. What do? I just read the quote.
Yeah.
I open and lay out a new and certain path for the mind to proceed in, starting directly from the simple sensuous perception.
He's breaking new grounds.
Sounds like he's just, you know, he's like, he opens up his mind. And, I open and lay out a new and certain path for the mind to proceed in, starting directly from the simple sensuous perception. Wow. So he sees something. And then just goes down the path of philosophizing about it. Is that what he's saying? It's got to be deeper than that, than the way I explained it.
Well, it sounds right. It sounds, what you're saying makes sense. It sounds like he's just saying, yeah. But every thought is kind of a new path, right? And if you follow that thought.
Yeah. But he seems like when he says, I open lay out a new and certain, it sounds like he's being, he doesn't stop himself from thinking it through.
So mm-hmm.
I don't know.
But that's kind of,
He's a philosopher. That's what he's paid to do.
But that's a joke writer too, right? I mean, here's a question for you. When you get a new piece of material that you're excited about,
uh-huh.
How far do you think about that thing Do you continue thinking, if this, then this, then this, then this?
I try to, you know, pile on, but I think that I hear people go do, you know, 6 minutes on one topic, and I go, God, I wish, I guess I can do that. I'd like, it makes me want to try it. Because sometimes I will write a joke, and then I get the rhythm to where it almost always works, and it's boom, ba-doom, 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 boom. And then I think I'm done, which I am, mm-hmm. but I could also pick it back up and hit it at another angle.
Right. A comedian I was opening for once saw a joke of mine that I was pretty proud of at the time. And he said, that's a great joke. And you know, I was like, thank you, thank you. He goes, but it's not done. I go, what do you mean? He goes, there's a lot more that you haven't explored on that idea.
Yeah.
And it got me to look back at the joke, and I did come up with some more stuff for it, but I also realized you can explore an idea endlessly. You know, you could be the you could come up with one joke for your whole career, uh-huh. and just work on that one joke.
Yeah, it's hard to know when you're done with it, but yeah. but also, you know, I've recorded albums and specials where you record it, and then 2 days later, you think of you make the joke much better, and it's too late at that point, at least to fix the special.
Mm-hmm.
Should we do the second quote?
Yeah, let's do the second quote.
Those who have taken upon them to lay down the law of nature as a thing already searched out and understood, whether they have spoken in simple assurance or professional affectation, have therein done philosophy and the sciences great injury. That's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, that one makes
like if you're just
sense.
Going, this is explained and there's nothing more to think about, we don't need to talk about this anymore.
That just reiterates his whole stance, that's all.
Ironically, that's all we have to talk about on this quote. All right, let's do the third one. Man, being the servant and interpreter of nature, can do and understand so much and so much only as he has observed in fact or in thought of the course of nature. Beyond this, he neither knows anything, nor can he do anything. I'm going to read that one again. Man, being the servant and interpreter of nature, can do and understand so much, and so much only as he has observed in fact or in thought of the course of nature. Beyond this, he neither knows anything, nor can he do anything. I feel like he's saying nature is the... is the boss, and he can only I don't know what that means.
I think he's
because it's sort of to me it sounds different from what he said in the prior quote. We gotta end with a bang, come on.
Well, let me think about it, because this second one
it's a pretty clunky sentence as far as I see.
Yeah, can I take a look?
It's a mouthful.
Man being a servant and interpreter of nature, okay, can do and understand so much and so much. It is wordy. I think he's...
Tighten it up, man.
He was a bit wordy.
Francis, man. Tighten this.
Can do and understand so much and so much only as he has observed. Well, you know what? This already just halfway through has to do with experience. Like, you know, you can only write about things that you've experienced. You can't write jokes about being a welder, I'm assuming, because you probably haven't welded. Yeah. I don't know your welding past. But you can only understand that which you've experienced, observed, in fact or in thought, of the course of nature. And also your limitation is whatever is within nature. You can't think outside of the universe because you can't even imagine what it would be outside of, you know, this universe. Beyond this, he neither knows anything nor can do anything. But how does this conflict with the other quote? Those who have taken upon themselves to lay down the law of nature.
Well, that sort of seems to say that, and I know I'm interpreting this wrong, though, just that you can only do so much, but on the prior quote, it almost seems like if you say you can only do so much, you're hurting science and philosophy. I'm sure I'm 100% positive I'm misinterpreting that. I'm not calling Francis Bacon out. That's for sure.
Yeah, they're cool. You know, it's funny, like, when I do these philosophers with different comedians, there are people that manage the Twitter handle of these philosophers, and they like to put up quotes from these philosophers, and they wind up following me on Twitter, and I wind up getting, like, retweets or likes.
Kierkegaard retweeted you.
Yeah. or I'll get from, I got one from Maimonides today.
Seriously? It's a long screen name.
Yeah. I put something on Twitter and Maimonides wrote, oh, that's funny. Those who have taken upon themselves to lay down the law of nature as a thing already searched out and understood. I see. So what he's saying the first time is these people are saying it's already searched out and understood. There's nothing more for me to look at in nature. You know, I think he's again talking to those first philosophers that came before him without the evidence. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, oh, you think you understand everything already? You don't understand anything. There's so much science that will answer all these questions. Whether they've spoken it in simple assurance or professional affectation, have therefore done philosophy and science great injury. He's saying, you're hurting philosophy and science by being arrogant and thinking you know everything.
That's
already.
In the third quote?
No, that was the second quote.
Okay.
I think that's the...
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Yes, I don't think that conflicts with the third one. Because the third one's saying you can only know so much, but the second one's saying there's always more to know. So it's saying at a certain point you can only know what's within the system. But the quote before that he's saying you haven't even studied what's within the system, and you're talking about it like you know.
The third quote then?
The third quote he's saying everything that you know is only based on what you can perceive in nature and in the universe. There's nothing that you can know. It's like that Beatles song. There's nothing you can know that can't be known. You know, there's nothing you can see that can't be shown. You know, there's... it's... Everything that we know is based on the system that we live in. So this goes, like... Stephen Hawking put out that book where he said that he disproved the existence of God. And while I haven't read it, and I'm sure I'd have a hard time understanding it, the summary of it that I read was basically he proved that there was no time in which God could have existed. And so the disproof is based on time. But the people who argue with his book are saying, well, time is a construct of this universe. If God exists, he'd be bigger than the universe.
Yeah.
So he would exist outside of time.
That's a good... I sort of sounds like a good point.
Yeah. So he's saying, basically, in the second quote, I think he's saying, don't philosophize without science, because it's assuming that you know things about how things run, about nature, about the universe, and you don't know. So you shouldn't be talking. You're doing a big disservice to philosophy. I don't think he's saying don't talk, but he's saying those who haven't taken it upon themselves to lay down the law of nature, I guess that's science, those who haven't taken it upon themselves to understand science, whether they have spoken in simple assurance or professional affectation, either if they're going out there talking professionally or simply, they've done philosophy and science a great injury because they don't know. They haven't done the work to understand it. But in the one that follows it, I think he's really saying everything you know is limited, though. Everything you can understand is limited. It's all within this system that we live in.
All right.
So I don't know. I don't see the I don't know.
Yeah,
if
I
it's
think
a conflict.
Okay.
Anyway,
it probably isn't, right?
I guess not. Or we stumbled upon.
This is a new discovery. We're going to be in the news tomorrow.
We stumbled upon a big crack in Bacon's thinking.
It's going down. do we do now? Plugs?
Well, what do you think of this? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did. I did. It's just sometimes I feel dumb, so I try not to. I get scared that I feel dumb, but I'm not that dumb. I'm pretty bright, actually.
I've always thought you're very bright.
I am.
Yeah.
Let's do these plugs. I have my special, the Crowdwork Tour. I went on a 7-city tour where I didn't do any prepared material, and Louis C.K. funded and produced this special, directed by a guy named Lance Bangs, and it's only $5 on louisck.net.
How much of the $5 do you see?
Oh,
how
that's
much
none
does
of your,
Louis?
That's none of your business. But, and you know that's none of your business. So there's that, and there's the Todd Barry podcast, and
which I've been on.
Yeah, follow me at Todd Barry on Twitter, toddbarry.com. That's it.
Enjoy the new place.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in. That's our show. I want to thank Todd Barry, my guest, Todd Barry. Todd sent me an email. He said about a little less than a week after the show, he says, and I'll read, I'll tell you the email as Todd. He goes, I did some research on Francis Bacon. Yeah. He was an artist. He did do art. So, I was right. That's my best Todd Barry that I can give you. But yeah, he was correct. There was a Francis Bacon the artist. I'll tell you something about him. Francis Bacon, October 28th, 1909, to April 28th, 1992, was an Irish-born British figurative painter. Known for his bold, emotionally charged, and raw imagery. So maybe the fact that the name Francis Bacon sounds like an artist is because Francis Bacon was an artist. Huh? That's my best Todd Barry that I can give you. Maybe it's not my best. It's my second best. I'll save the best for another time. You can email me at thecomical@yahoo.com. Say hello. Say what's up. Let me know what you think of the show. Let me know who you are. If you've emailed me already, keep the correspondence alive. I love it. I'm not lying. I have no incentive otherwise for getting you to email me. Otherwise, I'd say just send me some money, man, which I'm also saying. Please send me some money at moderndayphilosophers.net. Click donate. But I'd also love to hear from you. Or love to hear from you. Or if you can't do that, please spread the word. Tell your friends. Go on your social media sites. Go on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr even. I don't know. Post about the show. And if you can't do that, jump on iTunes and leave 5 stars and a nice review. And if you can't do that, mention it to somebody at a bus stop. If they have an iPhone, you're sitting there. Maybe you're at the bus stop. The guy's got an iPhone. Say, hey, you listen to podcasts? And then if it's yes, you say, oh, well, check out Modern Day Philosophers. I listen to it. I like it. Or if they say no, then just sit there quietly and don't explain why you even asked. Or you could just say, hey, you should start listening to podcast. All right, everybody. I'll try not to let it take so long before the next episode. It's a good one. Have a great week, everybody. Goodbye.